So the topic of tonight's lecture is India, ancient and modern. So when we hear the word ancient, what do we think of? Ancient India. Maybe we think about some diggings or some findings, but according to India's ancient culture, well, it's not really Indian, it's actual knowledge. We're talking about Veda. Veda means knowledge. It doesn't mean any ethnic, dogmatic writings. It means knowledge. So according to Ved, which is accepted as knowledge, or was accepted as knowledge in the area of the world now known as India, ancient is far more ancient than is imagined in the modern academic outlook. According to the modern academic outlook, well, I don't know exactly what it is because they're always changing their dates, but there's a general idea that man came into existence from monkeys. According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, animals, before there were humans, there were monkeys, and some of them, the monkeys would scamper along on four legs, and then some of them started to reach up to fruits in the trees, and in this way they became Homo erectus. In other words, and then from Homo erectus came Homo sapiens. Sapiens means intelligent. Homo sapiens. Sapient is a word still in English which means intelligent. So these supposedly intelligent people think that a man has descended from monkeys. And what happened? The monkeys, because they were always reaching up to the trees, therefore they stopped having four. Well, they became erect and they became human beings. So this is considered to be an intelligent proposal. However, the Vedic literature presents a much more intelligent proposal that intelligent life has not evolved from chance mutations of chemical. But life comes from life, not from matter. The modern idea is that life, which is undefinable in material terms anyway, has arisen from matter. Although this is called science, but science is supposed to be, at least in terms of what scientists would have us believe, science is supposed to be concerned with demonstrable phenomena. So if life comes from matter, then we would like the scientists to produce maybe one mosquito or one blade of grass or one cell, one living cell. But in their continuing inability to do so, we can say that the chicken is a better scientist than all the PhDs in the world, because the chicken lays an egg every day in which there's potential of life, whereas the scientists are only talking about it in future. Sorry if there are any scientists here, but those who claim that life is a product of matter, if they're actually scientific, should actually demonstrate it. Whereas we see life comes from life. If you take two dead chickens and try to mate them, you won't give birth to anything. There's no question. It's an absurd proposition. So anyway, the Vedic proposition is that intelligent life is not simply a recent product of random chemical interaction, but rather the whole cosmos is put into being by an intelligent being, which is a subject of major controversy in the scientific world at the present time. The intelligent design theory, the scientists themselves are realizing that even according to scientific analysis, the idea that everything has come into being by chance isn't scientific. And therefore, there's the intelligent design theory among scientists, which what we would call traditional scientists who say that, well, everything has come into being by chance, they say is thinly veiled theism, which it is, in fact. It's just a fact that the theistic outlook is at least as good a scientific proposition as the atheistic outlook that everything has come into being by chance. If we propose that everything in existence has come into being according to intelligent purpose and design, we can't find anything in observed reality which contradicts this. So even from the scientific stance, it's a tenable theory. But because of the history of what's called science as it's arisen in the Western world, it arose in the Western world in opposition to Christian dogma. It goes right back to Copernicus. So they practically have a vow that there should be no God, no soul, nothing, no... It's a long history. The fact is that in Christian dogma, there's not much knowledge, actually, of what goes on in the universe, and they had to speculate a lot. And when speculations, at some point, they found that empiric speculations, they seem to fit observed reality much better than Christian dogma. So that went on for some time until, with all the unsolved for almost a century now, problems in relativity theory and quantum theory and trying to put them together, then many scientists are coming to the conclusion, well, maybe the religious outlook wasn't so bad after all. Quantum theory itself brings in so many possibilities which don't seem to fit observable reality or even what we would call common sense. So anyway, the Vedic literature doesn't suffer from such a vast lacuna of knowledge as was there in the Western world. There is much information, scientific information, we can say. Just like geometry is supposed to have been a fairly modern invention of the Greeks. But we find in the ancient Vedic culture, the ancient Vedic culture was based on yajna. And yajna, or yajna, is the old yajna is a modern pronunciation. That was performed on altars which were made in various shapes, like birds, for instance. But the area of the altar had to be a specific size for various yajnas. Now, how do you get a bird-shaped altar to be in a specific... It should cover a specific area. So that was done by using what we would nowadays call sophisticated geometrical calculations. What's the word for triangle in Marathi? Trikona. It's a Sanskrit term. It's not something that was made up recently. The Sanskrit language is the oldest language known to mankind. But because certain scholars don't want to accept that, they say that it must have come from a prototype Indo-European language, of which there's no evidence whatsoever. There's not a single word from this imagined prototype Indo-European language in existence. But they just don't want to accept that Sanskrit and the vast body of knowledge that was there in the Sanskrit, ancient Sanskrit literature, was actually there, or that it could be the origin of all knowledge. Because they don't want to accept there was actually ancient and highly knowledgeable civilization. Now, another example is that also very important in ancient Indian culture was astrology. Nowadays, we tend to think of astrology principally for marriage, predictive astrology, but the main use of it was also for yajna, finding out what is the proper time for performing all kinds of activities. So to calculate that, astrology is based on astronomy. And using Vedic astronomy, we can predict, that's what it was for, the appearance of comets, eclipses, the time of the moonrise, sunrise, sunset. That was required, otherwise there was no astronomy. So that all depended on complex mathematics, which somehow is all being overlooked, and that it's modern mathematics it's something we have discovered it, but it was already there. Not only tree cone, all the words are there, sine, cosine, all everything is there. Trigonometry. Now, in the 20th century, Indian atheists took delight in the discovery of Pluto. And this shows that actually the Vedic astronomers, they didn't really know much, because there's no mention of Pluto in Vedic astronomy. But then, as you may know, Pluto has been deplanetized. It's no longer considered a planet. It was a mistake to call Pluto what they call Pluto. It's just another asteroid among maybe millions. It's just it's a bit bigger than others, but there are others even bigger than Pluto, just lumps of ice. What they now say is that Pluto is just a mass of ice and dust floating around. It's not really a planet at all. So anyway, when we're talking about ancient India, how ancient? The Vedic literature talks of circular time. In the modern academic theory, everything came into being from nothing, which doesn't sound very scientific, actually. There was nothing. And then all of a sudden there was an explosion. And then after some time, there was Charles Darwin, who told us that we descended from monkeys. This is called science. But actually the whole conception of linear time is adopted from a rather ignorant Western or Christian dogma, that God created the world at some point, and according to what Christians used to believe, I was taught it in school, and many still believe it, there was a man called Adam who was created by God, and he ate an apple, and because of that, all of human society is suffering from time immemorial. But then Jesus came and he died. Jesus is God, and they killed him. God was dead for 3 days. And then he rose from the dead. Specifically, those words are used. And that everyone who believes in him is saved. And anyone who doesn't believe in him goes to hell forever. And then that's the end of the world. And most people end up in hell forever, because they're all merciful. God sends everyone to hell because Adam ate an apple. And those who didn't get saved by Jesus, maybe they got born in Thailand or somewhere where people don't believe in Jesus much, and they go to hell forever. So anyway, this is, from that summary description, you might have surmised, as I also surmised at about the age of 12, that this is very poor theology. And it's a very poor presentation of what's supposed to be the explanation of everything in existence. So anyway, in the rather ignorant Christian worldview, everything comes into being at a certain point in time, and everything is finished, and that's it. There's nothing before or after. It's just, at one point, God was sitting on a cloud, and he had some idea to create a world. Oh no, there was Satan, that's right, God's competitor. That's there in Christian, supposed to be theology, that there's Satan who God's struggling with, and you know, he just about gets ahead of Satan, but it's a really tough job. So, anyway, at some point this everything is created, and then it's finished, and then it's all over, and that's it, all finished. Why God should create a world and then create a bunch of people and send most of them to hell forever? No explanation. So it's, but the idea is that there's a beginning and an end. That's it, finished. A blip in eternity. It might be zillions of years, but in eternity, the whole existence of the material cosmos is just blip, like that. A nanosecond in eternity. But the Vedic conception is much more realistic, apart from all that rather puerile, which means childish, theology. I'm not saying this to deliberately to rubbish anyone, but actually it is. There is not just that the universe is created and then destroyed and then it's all over, but the conception of circular time, that there's creation, sthiti pralay. It's creation, maintenance, and destruction. Then again, creation, maintenance, and destruction. There are cycles of time. Just like we see seasons, within India there are, I guess you could say, three main seasons, and which are divided again into six seasons. And in Europe, there is summer, winter, autumn, and spring. Sorry, out of order there. Spring, summer, autumn, winter. So there are various seasons, and it goes in a cycle. So in the same way, there are cycles of time. Satya Yoga, Treta Yoga, Dwarpa Yoga, Kali Yoga, and then again Satya Yoga. There are 1,000 such cycles. And that constitutes one day of Brahma. Sahasra Yoga Paryantam Ahayad Brahmano Viduhu, as described by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. 1,000 days and nights of Brahma, because at the end of 1,000 cycles, that's the end of his day, and then there's a night, and then he has 100 years of such days and nights, and then he dies, and everything is merged in Mahavishnu, and then again everything comes out. So this is the Vedic understanding. So when we say ancient India and modern India, first of all, what does ancient mean? It's not just that there's some archaeological digs, and then they come up with the conclusion that there was some civilization here. But according to the Vedic literature itself, the civilization in India, and actually, yeah, that's been going on for thousands and millions of years. When we say Bharat, Bharatiya, Sanskriti, well, Bharat used to mean the whole planet. Bharatavarsha. Now we say India. And even India, what Bharatavarsha, that also means what is presently included in Pakistan, Bangladesh, parts of Nepal. So it's becoming smaller. But the ancient Indian culture, actually, it's not much different to present, or a lot of what we see in present Indian culture, or at least until recently. Just like I first came to, actually I didn't come to Karnataka until much later, but I came to Maharashtra in the 1970s, and I was traveling in places like Yotmal, and I don't even remember the names, it's a long time ago. Small town. So Belgaon, sorry for the Kannadigas here, but it's like a town in Maharashtra in many ways. Anyway, in Maharashtra or Karnataka or whatever, in those days, in the 1970s, the culture was much more like the traditional culture than it is nowadays. And you wouldn't, traveling in those small towns in Maharashtra, I didn't see any pants and shirts or jeans. People didn't even know what jeans were, for instance. And much of the culture that's described in the Puranas and Ramayana and Mahabharata, it's the same culture. There's a continuum. Even down to small practices. From the late 1970s throughout much of the 1980s, I was traveling mostly in villages in Bangladesh, which is part of Bharatavarsha, but is now politically, temporarily, a separate country. Temporarily means that the culture is anyway the same. It's only on some artificial political consideration that it's a separate country. But the cultural usages are the same as, of course, it's Muslim dominated, but that was, but many of the Muslims, they follow the same, it's the same culture. Or they deliberately do the opposite to the Hindus. So, in a reflected way, it's the same culture. But just like, for instance, I learned while in the villages in Bangladesh, I saw that people don't walk over the... This is just a small point, I'm just giving it as an example. That people don't step over the rope that ties a cow. They would walk around it. Even if there was a little inconvenience for them, then they wouldn't walk over it. And later, when I was reading Manu Samhita, I saw one should not step over the rope which tethers a cow. Exactly why, it doesn't say. Maybe it makes sense to keep away from a cow because Manu also advises that too. Is it Manu or somewhere that one should keep a distance from horned animals? It makes sense because even cows, they're not always very gentle, especially with strangers. They can become afraid, and those horns, they can injure you. So, Manu is understood to be an ancient treatise. Actually, Manu, the whole Manava Jati, that Manava, the term comes from Manu. Manu is the first human. And from him all other humans have come. So our modern scholars or modern thinking scholars don't accept this. But it's accepted that Manu is ancient. And many ancient usages, you'll see, they're being followed until recently. Now, Manu is a book which the Indologists, the Western-oriented Indologists, love to criticize, Manu Sanghita or Manu Smriti. And they say that it's composed deliberately to keep the Brahmins on top and put down everyone else. Although Manu actually, from the descriptions of him, he wasn't a Brahmin himself. He's Kshatriya. So why he should put the Brahmins on top, I don't know why they say that. Anyway, you'll find in Manu Smriti, for example, that the punishment for instance, striking a Brahmana is much greater than that for striking a Shudra. And so they give this as an example of unfair discrimination, which is, it's based on the modern Western outlook, which is enshrined in the United Nations Charter of Human Rights, which is considered to be axiomatic, that all humans should have equal rights. But that's not there in the Vedic culture. It's not equal rights. It's not equal privileges. And actually, that's true in the modern world also. For instance, I saw in the Kali Yuga Purana, or the newspaper, from which we get all kinds of knowledge of the world and how to interpret it, we also find. Just like recently, I saw India Today. I stopped reading it about 25 years ago because it's so blatantly biased against any traditional culture. So I just looked at that for an analysis of the election results. So, it's blatantly, I'm not a spokesman for the, you might think I'm pro-BJP or anything, but actually I'm not. That's another, I won't get into that, but I'm not very convinced by the BJP's Hindutva. It was blatantly pro-Congress, blatantly means just, you could say, thinly veiled. So like that, all the newspapers, what they call news, they have their agenda also. And who will be called a terrorist in one country's newspaper will be called a hero in another country's newspaper. So in other words, don't trust the newspaper. Anyway, I read in there a small news item. that Tony Blair, the celebrated ex-Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, of Great Britain, Northern Ireland, the Channel Islands, and the Isle of Man, commonly known as the United Kingdom. Did I leave anything out? Orkney, Shetland Islands, and all this. So he was going on the train, the Heathrow Express. There's a train from Paddington Station, non-stop train to Heathrow Airport, which is just outside London. Maybe it's incorporated in Greater London, I don't know. So the system for traveling on that train is you can either buy a ticket in advance or you can pay on the train, and you have to pay a little extra. So when the ticket collector came and Tony Blair opened his wallet and said, "Oop, I don't have any money." And his bodyguard, he asked his bodyguard, he said, "Well, I don't have any either." So there he was. Technically, he was a criminal because he was traveling on the train without a ticket and he didn't have any money to pay it. But the ticket collector said, "Anyway, it doesn't matter," and let him off. And not other people wouldn't be let off. But because he recognized this is Tony Blair, the ex-Prime Minister, he let him off. Similarly, I was talking to some policeman or something. He'd stopped someone for speeding, and then he was Lord such and such, so he let him off. So there is discrimination also. That's the point I'm making here, is that certain people are considered honorable and respectable in modern society also. And they're not treated like everyone else. It's if a brahmana commits a crime, he's, of course, if he goes around with and starts killing people indiscriminately, then he should probably be restrained. But some minor infraction of the law, which you see, Tony Blair, I don't think he went deliberately without money, but it was just, you know, just didn't think about it. It was just some mistake. I did the same thing the other day. I lead a privileged existence also. So I went to a hospital and I went to see a doctor. I didn't bring any money because usually I have my faithful servant with me and he deals with all these things. So I went and I went with someone and we had to pay the doctor 400 rupees and he didn't have any money either. So then he had to go to an ATM and get the money and this and that. So it may be that you just forget. Tony Blair forgot, but he was let off. But other people wouldn't be let off. They're very strict. So why is a Brahmin, someone who strikes a Brahmin, they have a severe punishment, and one who strikes a Shudra, less punishment, because a Brahmin is considered more important. And they say, "Well, that's not fair. Everyone's equal." Well, is everyone in this room put together? Is their intellectual or contribution the same as that of one Einstein? No. So, of course, Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews. Einstein got out. Einstein was intelligent enough to see what was coming, and he got out of that area before all that happened. So just say, you know, like there are 100 criminals and one Einstein. So we don't want to encourage genocide or any such things, but if someone has to be killed, then I'm just giving this as an example here, then Maybe better to kill 100 criminals than one Einstein. In other words, the point I'm making here is that some people's contribution to human society is far greater than that of many other people put together. So the Brahmanas, they were called Bhudev. And actually their contribution was tremendous. As I was saying, Yajna was the fulcrum of ancient Vedic culture. And Brahmanas were required for that. And they had certain powers to invoke the blessings of higher beings, which modern people don't believe in, because they only believe in gross science. If they can't see it, they don't believe in it, which is most unscientific. Anything which they can't measure, they consider doesn't exist. So there's no God, there's no soul, there's no ghosts. And anyone who ever believed in God is stupid. That's the empiric so-called scientific outlook, which isn't very scientific at all, because if we consider the limits of what we can see, touch, smell, feel, hear, taste, and think about, it is very limited. So if we think that all knowledge is limited within our sensual and intellectual powers, that's stupid, to put it bluntly. To think that all knowledge is all that can be accepted as knowledge is only that which we can perceive. That's really stupid. Anyway, that's called science. So Manu, he favored the Brahmanas because they were the idea that everyone is equal. The artificial equality is not there in Vedic culture. And Vedic culture, what's nowadays called the caste system, well, it wasn't by birth alone. Birth was a factor, but then it's not the only factor. If someone is born in a Brahmin family but doesn't act as a Brahmana, he's not considered a Brahmana. And if someone has Brahminical possibilities, they may be allowed to develop that. So it wasn't simply based on birth. But because there was a whole science of family planning, which doesn't mean hum do, hamare do. That's what they call family planning, using contraceptives. But the whole conception of family planning in Vedic culture was much more scientific, based on knowledge of the subtle laws of the universe. The laws of karma. For every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. That's considered scientific. Well, on the subtle level also, svakarma phala bhuk puma. Everyone gets the results of their activities. So, if people act in a manner, in a highly cultured manner, they're likely to be born in a highly cultured atmosphere and continue where they left off in their last life. So birth in a Shudra family or lower, that is because people are on a lower cultural and karmic level, generally speaking. So those who are born outside of Vedic culture altogether, like myself, they're even on a much lower level. But actually, in ancient culture, the Shudras or what they would have to follow is much more than any so-called Brahmins in the modern age follow. So, to be a Vedic Shudra, that also required much discipline and culture. So, birth was a consideration, but then in Kali Yuga, when it became the only consideration, And the brahmanas who are supposed to be culturally elevated and selfless, they instead use their privileges to exploit others, then we got the caste system. So that's very simplistic but not unrealistic analysis. Of course, these are all very big topics. But anyway, my point is that the ancient culture, first of all, it's very much misunderstood. It's deliberately been given bad publicity or bad exposition by, it began with the British invaders who wanted to show that their way of life is better, and they wanted to justify their ruling of India. There was no real justification except might makes right. And some of them wanted to impose Christianity. So first of all, they wanted to show that Christianity predates Vedic culture, but they weren't able to do that. And so they tried to rubbish it in many ways. And apart from that, there were so many things like cutting off the thumbs of weavers in Bengal because they could make better, finer cloth than can be produced in the mills in Lancashire. And just recently someone was telling me that there are certain kind of knives which are still there, which were made by people in Karnataka, which was so well made that the knife can go right through stone. The British wanted to be told how to make this, and the people, they refused. That's our caste secret. So the British killed them all, and now no one knows how to make that. So there was actually a very violent suppression of the ancient Indian culture. Ancient means it was going, many aspects of it were going on till recent times. And not only grossly violent destruction, but in other ways also by intellectual attacks on Vedic culture. And up to the present time, what is called Hinduism, which is actually a very poor term, but some... It's actually an insulting term given by Muslims, but Hindus have adopted it. Garv se kaho hum Hindu hai. It's just like, you know, someone calls you sua ka bacha. Garv se kaho hum sua ka bacha hai. It's like something like that. Hindu was a pejorative term, and now the Hindus have adopted it as garv se. So anyway, it's not a very good term. It's a sectarian term, whereas Ved means knowledge, and knowledge is not sectarian. So that's presented up to the present time. It's presented in the universities and through the media in the Western world as something very ignorant, barbaric, and backward. And the Hindus believe it also, because somehow or other they believe that everything in the West is better. But actually this culture, this ancient culture, the remnants of which are still going on in the modern age, that was based on knowledge which was destroyed in the Western world long ago. As I was saying, Bharatavarsha, that previously meant the whole planet. Although this particular area, that means from the area bordered by the Sindhu on the west, the Himalaya in the north, Ganga in the east, that means Ganga Saga, and Kanyakumari in the south. That area, and then the what's now called the Arabian Sea and the Indian Ocean and the Bay of Bengal, are the traditional names are Ratnakar in the west and Mahodadi in the east. So the area bounded by that particular area is considered conducive for spiritual elevation. But actually this culture was going on all over the world, and although these facts are suppressed, but ancient deities of Ganesh and Shiva and Vishnu have been found all over the world. That means, what does that mean? It's true. Yeah. So even they know. So they've been found all over the world. These are suppressed. There are phenomena, ancient phenomena all over the world, which shows that there was highly advanced knowledge, even in the ancient world, just like the pyramids in Egypt. No one's got the faintest idea how they could have been built in the modern world. According to modern understanding, they shouldn't be there, because they're built with such advanced knowledge of geometry and engineering. And anyway, how do you get the stone material from which they're built to that particular site of the pyramid when the stone, that kind of stone, is not there for hundreds of miles away? Huge stones, bigger than you can put on a modern train car. And then how do you get it all in place? Modern cranes can't do it. So how is it built? They don't know. And then it's seen that they have astronomical significance also. Similarly, there's Stonehenge in England, which that the stones are, it's stone structure with huge stones. Again, such stones are not found in that area. How did they get there? And they're placed in, I don't remember exactly, but it's such, they're placed in such a manner that at the summer solstice, it shows that the persons who made them had very advanced astronomical knowledge, actually. And there are various phenomena such as this all over the world. But the knowledge of the Druids, who are called pejoratively, are termed pagans. The pre-Christian culture of Europe is called pagan, and it's considered to be something very primitive, and heathen is another word they use, and it was concerned with, they say it was all this kind of magic, and magic means they had some mantras and they were able to do things that modern people can't do, like, for instance, maybe bringing stones from one side to another. There are many things described, just like in Mahabharata we'll find that, for instance, Arjuna, he fires arrows, and it's like thousands of arrows at once. So you say, well, that's just, you know, it's just some story. But it's possible. How? By mantra shakti. It's not just a big strong body, but the Kshatriyas had weapons which were, they're empowered by mantra also. So they could do various things, which modern weapon, it was fighting with bows and arrows, not like the Adivasis' bows and arrows. So they did have highly developed knowledge, but that was destroyed. Christianity's gift to the world is that anyone who doesn't agree with them, they just In the history we see, they just kill them all. That's all. That's their general answer to anyone who doesn't agree with them. They just kill them. It's not a very... And they call that civilization. So actually in the ancient world, outside of India, this knowledge was there also. And many facets of, not just like this Ashok Stambha in Delhi, they can't imagine by modern metallurgy how to make such a thing. But at the same time, they want to say that this ancient culture was all very backward. No, actually it was highly advanced. But they just ignore that. It's just bias. And the modern Indians are convinced that that's true. Our culture is backward. We have to adopt the Western culture. Just as you see, all of you are here dressed in pants and shirts. And mostly they're made from... the pants are made from some polyester or something like that. And the jeans, they might be pure cotton, but it's thick, heavy cotton. So in traditional culture, you should wear a dhoti, which is thin cotton, much better for this climate. You'd be much more comfortable in a dhoti. And it's much cleaner too. You can wash it and it's dry. Whereas with these, how many days are you wearing these things? Day after day after day. It's not clean. But you wouldn't be seen dead in a dhoti. You don't even know how to put it on. Because you're convinced that your culture is backward. But you're stupid, because you can be much more comfortable in traditional dress and cleaner. But because you're all convinced that this is backward and only stupid people wear dhotis, you've been convinced by people who want to sell you these things that you should wear it, and it's civilized to do so. They've cheated you. That's just one example of so many things. You're cheated into thinking that your culture is backward. We have to adopt Western culture. But actually the ancient Vedic culture is more advanced in all respects, because the basis of it is, or what it's all supposed to lead to, is Brahma Jignyasa. Atato Brahma Jignyasa. We should inquire into the nature of ultimate reality. Janma Mrityu Jaravyadhi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. This is knowledge. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes that perception of the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease, this is knowledge. Knowledge doesn't mean MSc, PhD. That's Shudra knowledge, actually. You think, nowadays we think it's highly advanced, but it's all, what is this modern education? Just how to get a job, that's all. But a Shudra means one who has to depend on others. Who will support me? But in Vedic culture, Brahmanas, they, for a start, they don't need much. They live very simply because they're spiritually advanced. They don't want a fridge and a TV and AC and all these things. Whatever God gives, they accept. And people give them what they need. They're independent in the sense they don't have to become anyone's servant. That they speak the truth. If people like it or don't like it, they speak the truth, because they're not dependent on others for their maintenance. They depend on God. So the knowledge is ultimate. It's based on the understanding that this material world is miserable. We don't belong in this material world. We're meant for spiritual elevation. We have so much knowledge of this world, but ultimately the highest knowledge is how to get out of this world. That knowledge is there. And with that goes the whole culture. Just like the culture up to the present day is that those who aren't very sophisticated and modern educated, when they see a sadhu, they bow down. And those who are very advanced, they don't bow down. Because they think, who the hell is this guy? I have a university degree, and he doesn't have a university degree. Or if he has, well, maybe I got better one than him. They measure it all on, it's the modern Indian caste system, that it's based on what degree you get. What is your name? What is your educational qualification? Question number two. So, it's the old caste system is going out, and it's the new caste system, based on your educational qualification. You have to, from the age of about 3 days, or maybe even before you're born, the parents are arranging for your education, and you have to work. We say work like an ass, although asses don't work nearly so hard as the modern Indian for education. And eventually you get a piece of paper which says that you are an MSc or something, and that is your certificate to spend your whole life working much harder than an ass. And you call this being a success. So, but in ancient Indian culture is yavat artha prayojanam. Work just for what you need. Not work, 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 work. Anytime you're thinking, okay, you can spend 20 minutes eating and back to work. Don't eat, don't sleep, just work. I mean, actually, in companies, they say that. Some companies, they say, don't go home, stay here and work. But Vedic culture is contemplative, thinking. In modern India, people, they learn a lot, but they don't think a lot. They don't think at all. They don't even know how to think. They can think, like I say, like a Shudra, how to write some software. But actual thinking about the realities of existence, it's not there. Even what we call Hinduism, Hindu religion, it's just we find many people, they may be scientists or whatever, they also go to the temple. They turn off their science thinking. It's actually science, it's technology, Shudra. They turn that off and they go, turn on the religious, pray to God. They have separate ways of thinking. Neither way is our thinking. They don't think. They don't think, who am I? Who is God? What is the nature of reality? They're just that God, please inspire my boss to give me a pay rise. That's all. It's no actually spirit. What goes on in the name of spiritualism, spirituality? Nothing spiritual about it. Then people have no knowledge of the soul or the actual purpose of human life. So, the differences between ancient and modern India are, well, people are dressed in shirts and pants, and nowadays the girls, they like to smoke and show in this way they're very advanced. How stupid. They think we're becoming very advanced by smoking. Well, what can I say? They think we're very intelligent, but it just shows how you're completely stupid. Yeah, that's another thing. The women will hate me for saying this, but women's liberation, it's another modern idea, so-called liberation, which means that you become the slave of some company, and instead of being exploited by one man, you get exploited by many men. And you have no security and many times no children. Even if you have children, you hardly ever see them because you're busy working and going out with your boyfriend while your husband's going out with his girlfriend and all this kind of thing. So it's a hoax for cheating the women. Just like everyone's cheated, just like you're cheated into wearing this uncomfortable clothing. And you're cheated into working like much harder than any ass would agree to. And you're cheated to think that you're better off by your so-called women's liberation. And in so many ways, people have no idea of the goal of life. They're totally devoid of any ability to even think about what the goal of life is. And even if we suggest it, people say, oh, that's not important. We have to go out to the park, to the bar, to the pub. What are you talking about? So this is all quite recent, actually. Like I say, many of the 70s? Yeah, 30-odd years ago, you wouldn't... There was a difference in dress style, and the culture was quite different. It was practically the ancient culture was going on. Already some compromise was there, but it's really just recently that India has become degraded to the extent that it is now. And of course, they call it becoming progressive and advanced, but like I say, these are just terms to cheat you. The Vedic culture is meant for spiritual uplift, but that's not there. And what goes on in the name of spirituality in modern Hinduism, that's also mostly all cheating. Just like they say, the art of living. And that's all about how to adjust to the modern world and live better in it. But spirituality means janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam. To understand that this material world is miserable, so if anyone in the name of spirituality or proffers that to give you a way in which you can live very happily in this world, he's just cheating you, because this world by its very nature is miserable, and any intelligent person can see that and start to act in a manner that they don't have to remain in this material world. But the so-called sadhus, they're just giving ashirvadam that you can live happily in this world, which is not possible anyway. So it's not based on knowledge, it's just based on it's not guru. Guru means heavy, it's all laghu. Laghu means light, superficial. What goes on in the name of Hinduism, all superficial. The priests and the gurus, they don't care about the priests don't care about who comes to the temple. You can call some Brahmins to do some Griha Pravesh, they don't care, they just want some money, that's all. You go to the holy places and the pandas just want to squeeze out not only the money you have with you, but if they could, they'll put you into debt. They want to squeeze everything. It's just totally materialistic. There's no actual spiritual knowledge. So actual Vedic culture is meant for living as well as we can in this world, which is by nature miserable, without making too much effort. And understanding our actual spiritual position. We're just like Lord Krishna begins his teaching in Bhagavad Gita. Dehino smnyata dehe komarang yovanang jara tata dehantara praptihi. By teaching that, the body goes through various changes, but the dehi, or the inhabitant of the deha, namely the soul, that remains unchanging. So the body changes from boyhood to youth to old age and then dies. But the person remains the same. Therefore, we can conclude that the person which doesn't change continues to exist after the demise of the body. So Vedic culture is based on this understanding, actual spiritual understanding. What is the nature of spirit? As I say, yes, I was giving the example, Srila Prabhupada gave the example that even an uneducated villager in India, if they see a sadhu, they will bow down. And they know they may not be educated, they may not have kaka gyan, but they know that I'm not the body, I'm in my present situation due to previous karmas, that the goal of life is to ultimately to get free from material entanglement, and that if there's a spiritually advanced person, I should offer respect. So Prabhupada said, in this way, they're far more their knowledge is far more advanced than any PhD or MSc, even though they can't read or write. So it's this culture that the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is supposed to be reviving. There are many misconceptions which have been propagated. So this evening I'm just given a short overview of India, ancient and modern. Modern, that you can see all, you know, Bollywood and modern Indian culture means Bollywood, TV. What is there on TV? Violence, sex, advertisements, right? There's some violence and then some sex and then some advertisements and cricket, which is nonsense. It's not Indian culture. It's just throwing a ball and someone hits it with a piece of wood and it's completely meaningless. So sex, violence and advertisements, what's that? That's kaam, krodh, lobh, right? Sex is kaam, violence is krodh, and advertisements is lobh, because they're advertising all things that you don't need. Pepsi Cola, Coca-Cola, if it wasn't advertised, no one would ever buy it because there's nothing in it. But they're making billions of dollars profit because they advertise, and people think, oh, I have to drink Coca-Cola. And they go and buy it. So they're in pralobhan karte hain. They're making lobh. They're inciting you. So in this way, modern so-called culture is based on increasing kama, krodha and lobha. And ancient Indian culture is on getting free from these. So the only really intelligent thing to do is to understand that modern culture, for all it's advertised to be progressive and advanced, fits the description in Bhagavad Gita of Lord Krishna in describing the asuric pravritti, demoniac inclination, says, Trividham narakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmanaha kamas krodhas tata lobha. There are three gates leading to hell, namely lust, anger and greed. So modern civilization is based on lust, anger, greed and lies. Mispropaganda. Drink Coca-Cola, you'll be happy. Lie. Wear pants and shirts, that is better. Lie. India's ancient culture is ignorant and backward. Modern culture is better. Lie. It's all lies. So therefore, tasmat etat trayang tyajet. Therefore, anyone intelligent, they should give up this lust, anger and greed. So, you can consider. And I'm going to take a break for a few minutes. And you can chant Hare Krishna in the meantime. And maybe, if you like, you can think about what's been said. And then I'll come back. And if there's any discussion, anyone wants to ask any questions, you can preferably write it down and give it to me. Otherwise, you can take questions verbally also. So thank you for listening. That's quite a quality in the modern age. People who are accustomed to watch TV, they can't usually listen very long because TV actually destroys your intelligence. It's called the idiot box, and only idiots watch the kind of thing that's on it. And if you're not an idiot, you'll definitely become one by watching it, even if it's National Geographic. Because it just feeds you with a bunch of propaganda, and just the very medium